Greetings from the Audible Local Ledger. My name's Eric. I'll be reading you selections from the e-edition of today's Cape Cod Times. Today's date is April 23rd of 2024. It's a Tuesday. We'll start with the weather. Today, mostly sunny. Across the Cape and Islands, 54 degrees, the expected high. Tonight, it'll be a little lower than usual, 39 degrees, the expected low, increasingly windy, increasing clouds, and tomorrow, cloudy, breezy, with showers around in the afternoon, high of 57. Temperature drops pretty low on Wednesday night, tomorrow night, expected low of 33. So there'll be frost on the ground on Thursday morning, where it will be 51 during the day with plenty of sunshine. But again, 37 degrees in the overnight's a little chilly for this time of year. Friday and Saturday look really nice. Plenty of sunshine, mid-50s, low 40s in the overnight. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, lots and lots of sunshine. Tomorrow, a little rain in the afternoon and chilly tomorrow night and Thursday night in the overnight. The sun will rise today at 5:48 a.m. It'll set at 7:31 p.m. We'll have 13 hours and 43 minutes of daylight. The moon rises at 7:31 p.m. It'll set at 5:31 a.m. Now, moving to the front of the paper, where the news, of course, and the lottery results are kept. And we read these lottery results because they were requested by several listeners. And because they asked for it, we figured we'd give it to you. If you miss any of the information that we share, like these lottery results, you can always go to audiblelocalledger.org. And in the upper right corner is the Archived Readings tab. If you click on that, you'll find a week's worth of our newspaper readings, and you can catch up on anything that you might have missed. We also have shopping guides up there, so you can see what savings are in store at the grocery store. And under the literature tabs, you'll find a wide variety of entertaining stories, short stories, plays, and summaries of great literature. All of that is free for people who are blind or print disabled at audiblelocalledger.org. If you'd like to suggest something for us to read, you can call us at 508-539-2030 or email us at info@audiblelocalledger.org, and we'll consider reading it. For the latest results in the lottery, we go to masslottery.com because the Cape Cod Times goes to press too early to give it to you. And if you ask for it, you deserve the latest results. With the numbers game results for Monday, April 22nd, yesterday's midday drawing, the numbers were 2, 0, 1, 5. Again, yesterday's midday drawing, 2, 0, 1, 5. Last night's evening drawing of the numbers game for Monday, April 22nd, 9, 8, 2, 3. Last night's numbers game, evening drawing results, 9, 8, 2, 3. Mass cash for Monday, April 22nd, 5, 11, 23, 25, and 26. Powerball results for Monday, April 22nd, 12, 16, 33, 39, and 52, with 1 the bonus number. Megabucks for Monday, April 22nd, 7, 10, 14, 21, 35, and 43. And Lucky for Life rounds out our lottery results for Monday, April 22nd with 33, 36, 39, 40, and 47, with 15, the bonus number. Good luck to all who play. Remember us if you win. From the cover of today's Cape Cod Times, the headline above the fold, if there was such a thing in a digital newspaper, reads, New Affordable Housing Units Are Planned for Orleans by 2025, by Zane Razak, in Orleans. When Cape Cod 5 announced plans to leave its headquarters on West Road in 2019, town officials sprang into action. A feasibility study was conducted to investigate new uses for the 3.5-acre parcel on West Road adjacent to the Shaw's Shopping Plaza. We really came to terms with them to say, please don't put this on the market. We think we can make this into a housing project, said Select Board member Kevin Galligan. Developer Penrose, which was also behind the 65-unit Village at Nauset Green in Eastham, will transform the property into a multifamily rental development of 62 units. 47 units will be affordable, 15 will be workforce apartments at varying income levels, including up to 30, 60, 80, 100, and 120% of the area median income. 9 units will be reserved for extremely low-income households, below 30% of area median income. 43 units below 60% area median income, and 10 units below 120% area median income. Area median income for a family of four in Barnstable County is $108,700. So 80% of area median income in Barnstable County for a family of four is $86,950. What does the project look like? Well, the former bank headquarters will be redeveloped with a new addition, and two separate townhouses will be constructed. Penrose Regional Vice President Charlie Adams called the existing building perfect for conversion to residential, noting there's already an elevator. When we first came in and looked at it, it was really interesting. It looked like an assisted living facility, said Adams. I think that works. I think we can make it into housing. It looked like it was already housing. On Wednesday, the sweeping construction site was buzzing. Units were beginning to take shape as steel stud framing was installed on the third floor of the complex. This week, Delbrook construction workers were expected to do a full roof replacement and begin laying down foundation for the townhouses. It creates a community that is not one single look. It's going to have some diversity to it, said Galligan. Amenities will include a community terrace, playground, and seating, community garden and picnic area, a townhouse shared patio, walking trails, and 78 parking spaces, as well as an indoor fitness center and club room. There's a huge demand, obviously, on the Cape for all kinds of housing. It's going to be family. We have family units available. We also tend to see more senior folks. That's been our experience with our other development in Eastham, said Adams. The demographics here are pretty high on the senior side, and there tends to be a higher level of seniors when we do a project like this than we might see in other parts of the state. The project is slated for completion next year. Since moving out, Cape Cod 5 has constructed its new operations center on Route 132 in Hyannis. Orleans Affordable Housing Coordinator, Marsha Algayer, previously told the Times that the last official state housing inventory showed 9.15% of Orleans housing stock is affordable and that the town expects to cross the 10% threshold under 40B with the next update. Where's that funding coming from? Federal and state credit, tax credit financing by Massachusetts Executive Office of Housing and Livable Communities and $19.2 million in financing from Mass Housing has been secured for the project, according to the town website. The approximately $27 million project is also bolstered by a $2 million bond from the Orleans Community Preservation Committee, said Affordable Housing Trust Fund Board Chairman Alan McLennan, so it's paid back in 20 years instead of one. All 8 towns on the lower and outer Cape have also kicked in money. One of the most interesting parts of the project is the community support from the surrounding communities and how Penrose worked with other towns to raise $800,000, bringing attention that this is not an Orleans issue. This is a regional issue and a community issue, said Orleans Select Board Chairman Michael Herman. Cape Cod 5 reduced the sale price and sold the building at a discount, noted Adams. They could have gotten more money for the property, and they sold it at a lesser price because they wanted to be committed to affordable housing, said Adams. The Barnstable County Board of Regional Commissioners authorized a $1.5 million American Rescue Plan Act grant for the project, which served as the final push to help close the funding gap. There's been so many moving parts to make this happen, and a lot of phone calls, said Galligan of the overall project. The next headline. In the Cape Cod Times of Tuesday, April 23rd, older Cape Internet users may benefit from a new plan to improve service. This is reported by Suryatapa Chakraborty of the Boston University State House Program. Affordability and accessibility are Cape Cod's biggest challenge to achieving digital equity, town officials and local representatives said as Massachusetts moves ahead with a plan to reach that goal. The Massachusetts State Digital Equity Plan created by the Massachusetts Broadband Institute, was approved on March 26th by the National Telecommunications and Information Administration. 3 days later, the state received $14.2 million from the Digital Equity Act under the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law as part of the Internet for All initiative, which will help implement the programs in the state's digital equity plan. Digital equity means ensuring that all people and communities have the skills, technology, and capacity needed to reap the full benefits of the country's digital economy. We as a region lack competition in terms of broadband service, and a result of that is having the highest internet prices of any of the regions in Massachusetts, said Stephen Tupper, deputy director of the Cape Cod Commission. Tupper said while Cape Cod's well-connected region, where most residents have access to devices that meet their needs, it's important to note that these experiences aren't universal. He said affording an internet connection and an appropriate device is a challenge for many households. While the resources are available, there are barriers to accessing those resources. Many can't afford the $60 monthly charge, said Judy Wilson, director of Orleans Council on Aging and Senior Center. Wilson said there should be grants and assistance made available for those who need technology but can't afford to purchase them. She said that people use Verizon if they can afford it, and many seniors in affordable housing at Tonset Woods in Orleans can't afford the monthly cell phone plan for Verizon and use track phones, which have horrendous reception in many parts of town. After the COVID-19 pandemic, there's been a major transition to the use of technology in many areas of daily life, such as accessing medical records, applying for senior housing, purchasing tickets for concerts, or making travel arrangements, she added. Many older adults have struggled to make this transition. The town strives for a community where all residents and visitors can easily, safely, and equitably access the internet, said Michael Solutro, assistant town planner of Orleans. Yarmouth Town Administrator Robert Rittenhour said that the town has internet services through its license agreement with Comcast, but he added, service is costly, speeds vary, and affordable alternatives to Comcast aren't always readily available. He said Yarmouth has multiple economic justice areas with residents with relatively low income, which adds to the digital divide in terms of affordability. The town has also applied for funding through the MBI to support broadband expansion in our community, Rittenhour said. He added that Yarmouth will seek digital equity planning services through Massachusetts Broadband Institute's Municipal Digital Equity Planning Program. Our rural areas have the most significant challenges in terms of connectivity, said Tupper. He added that the Cape has a large aging population, which adds to more challenges in the digital equity realm, as many of these individuals didn't grow up with technology, and so they statistically have more challenges. The state's been doing a lot of work in this space, Tupper said. The commission has also been coordinating with the state to make sure that they are aware of the regional broadband needs of the Cape. What I'd like to see is the appropriate level of attention and resources paid to this challenge, Tupper said. Michael Baldino, Director and General Counsel of Massachusetts Broadband Institute, said that they're excited about the recently approved plan, which will serve as a roadmap for future investments that will continue to advance digital equity on the Cape and surrounding regions. The next headline, as we keep it local here at the Audible Local Ledger, reading you the e-edition of the Cape Cod Times of April 23rd. It's a Tuesday. Police say that a Provincetown man possessed child sexual abuse images on a phone, by Zane Razak. A 63-year-old Provincetown man was arrested Thursday after thousands of images and videos of child abuse material were discovered on his cell phone, according to the Federal Department of Justice. Lawrence Pagnoni was charged with one count of possession of child pornography and one count of distribution of child pornography. After appearing in federal court in Boston, he was released with conditions including home detention with electronic monitoring, said Acting U.S. Attorney Joshua S. Levy's office in a statement. Pagnoni's attorney, Nat Carney, declined comment. In March of 2023, a person arrested in a child exploitation sting reported to law enforcement that Pagnoni allegedly shared child sexual abuse images with him through the online storage platform Mega, according to the statement. It's alleged that Pagnoni sent thousands of files to this individual, according to the statement. Pagnoni's Provincetown home was searched in May of 2023, and a number of items, including his cell phone, were seized. His cell phone was allegedly found to contain thousands of abuse images, including at least 51 known series identified by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. The case was brought as part of Project Safe Childhood, a nationwide initiative to combat child sexual exploitation and abuse, according to the statement. Launched in May of 2006 by the Department of Justice, the project uses federal, state, and local resources to find and prosecute individuals who exploit children, as well as find and rescue victims. For one charge of distribution of child pornography, Pagnoni faces a mandatory minimum sentence of 5 years and up to 20 years in prison, at least 3 years of supervised release, and a fine of up to $250,000, according to the statement. From the Cape and Islands section, Bagel Hound plans to open new location in former A&W in Harwichport, by Zane Razak, in Harwichport. Bagel Hound plans to breathe new life into a shuttered site and open a new location in the iconic former A&W Root Beer on Route 28. Claire Adams, who runs Bagel Hound with her husband Ellery Elthos, said, "It's an honor to revamp and open something that has a bigger history than just us. It just feels exciting to play off the vibe that it already has going for it, and to infuse ourselves in that is a fun extra to making bagels, which we already love," said Adams. West Harwich Realty Trust and trustees Patty O'Donnell and Amy Kenevo sold the property in a sale recorded April 5th for $1.075 million to Truro-based CEZ&V, which is Adams and Althouse's limited liability company, according to the Barnstable County Registry of Deeds and the Secretary of State's office. West Harwich Realty Trust purchased the property in 1969 for $37,000. Bagel Hound has locations in Provincetown and Wellfleet, both of which will remain open, said Adams. "We've reached our capacity," said Adams. "We've been looking for a space to expand our baking space for a while, and when we came upon this spot, we fell in love with it." Harwich will be new territory for the brand. Adams said they were looking at spaces further down Cape to expand their footprint, and also were attracted to the town's bigger year-round population. She said she believes the new location will be open year-round. "It does need some work and needs some love," said Adams on when the store could open. "As soon as possible, we'll be selling bagels." The 6,384-square-foot building with a trademark orange roof and decor on 1.35 acres was built in 1950 and was announced as for sale in 2022. The restaurant was known for its famous frosty root beer floats, trademark All-American menu of burgers, hot dogs, and seafood, and 1960s-era throwback atmosphere. The closest A&W to Cape Cod is on Putnam Pike in Greenville, Rhode Island, 2 hours and about 100 miles west. The next headline in the Cape and Islands section, there's two stories in there today. A reminder, it is April 23rd, a Tuesday. "Can Bourne Library Repairs Wait? Where the Money Stands Now," by Paul Gately, as a special to Cape Cod Times in Bourne. The distinctive cupola atop Bourne Public Library with its whale ship weather vane is an instantly recognizable icon, and it needs repairs again. Cupola funding remains a sensitive, if not unsettling, point as town officials and the elected Board of Library Trustees consider the overall library future in an early 1920s red brick elementary school that the district closed in the 1980s. Library trustees may ask for Community Preservation Act funds at a fall town meeting, rather than the originally planned May 6th town meeting at the request of Town Administrator Marlene McCollum and Assistant Town Manager Liz Hartsgrove. Some library trustees say the cupola is mostly weathertight and that water infiltrates the 99-year-old weathered building when rain is swept by winds, but only out of certain directions. They say fixes need not be imminent. Others, however, say they cannot imagine the cupola is watertight at all. The sentiment now is that cupola funds would be premature and should not be sought until a complete library facilities study is undertaken and a report submitted to trustees. Members suggest the report could be consequential as to the library's future. Trustees on March 28th said they have long assumed any significant upgrades would wait until a new fire station south of the canal is financed. However, some support is needed to maintain a library with deteriorating features until its future can be determined, trustees said. How much does it cost to restore the Bourne Public Library cupola? CPA Historic Resources account records show $112,000 spent on cupola roof repairs to date, with an unexpended balance of $95,000 in a 2021 town meeting article. And Gale Associates reports $123,160 is needed for further fixes still to be determined. Trustees agree future work can be carried out atop the library and that the cupola would not have to be taken down, similar to a 2014 project that didn't ultimately stop the leaks, according to minutes of former trustee meetings. We do not get into how the CPA funds are administered, CPA committee chair Barry Johnson noted in a March 29th email. We're the funding source, and then implementation is left to the town administration to oversee the project. Johnson, in a separate area, has compiled a list of unexpended CPA balances involving approved appropriations, and on April 1st sent it to Finance Committee review. He said the list includes $60,000 for front door replacement at the library. If the project's not undertaken and completed, he added, the funds return to the CPA Historic Resources account. The library, over three decades, has suffered from benign municipal neglect, with capital spending priorities always shifting to public safety needs, new schools, and a new public works complex. The library sits in quiet Bourne Village in a building that doesn't vie for significant structure status. A new library has been the dream of BPL trustees, stretching back two decades. It's been a rough road trip of watching and waiting through plans, architectural renderings, and futuristic drawings. The end result? Trustee frustration and changes in library science as well as patron demands. And then the plans are back on the shelf. We've completed the local news in our half-hour reading of the Cape Cod Times today. On the cover, the headline reads, Opening arguments start in the Trump trial. In New York, after 4 days of jury selection, former President Donald Trump's New York hush money trial kicked off for real Monday with opening statements. The case centers on allegations that Trump falsified business records to cover up a hush money payment from his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, to porn star Stormy Daniels. According to prosecutors, Trump authorized the payment in order to keep Daniels from hurting his 2016 presidential campaign by going public with her story that the pair had sex. Trump denies Daniels' claim that they had sex and has pleaded not guilty. The trial's not being televised as per New York court rules, and Merchan, the judge, asked the media not to report identifying details of jurors. He has not sequestered the jury. Merchan gave jurors extensive instructions on the trial and their role within it. He told them not to be influenced by stereotypes or implicit biases. He said they're not permitted to speak with others about the case because they are the only authorized to decide. And then the statements began. The prosecution laid out its case. This case is about a criminal conspiracy and a cover-up, said prosecutor Michael Colangelo. Trump orchestrated a criminal scheme to interfere with the 2016 presidential election and covered it up by lying in his New York business records over and over and over again. He described to jurors a meeting among Trump, Cohen, and a tabloid publisher, David Pecker. The men agreed to a three-pronged conspiracy to interfere with the 2016 presidential election, Colangelo said. Pecker would be the campaign's eyes and ears, reporting potentially harmful information to Cohen, who would work to keep it quiet. Colangelo described this as the core of the conspiracy. Pecker would publish flattering stories about Trump. Pecker would use his publications to attack Trump's political opponents. Part of the scheme? A catch-and-kill, quote-unquote, effort to secure the story of former Playboy model Karen McDougal, who said she had an affair with Trump, a claim Trump denies. Pecker agreed to have his company pay McDougal $150,000 to keep her quiet by buying exclusive rights to her story, but then not publishing it. Jurors will hear Trump in his own voice on tape saying, "So what do we got to pay for this? $150? The prosecutor said. The core reason for the payment was to keep the story from hurting Trump's campaign, Colangelo claimed. Then came the effort to quiet Daniels. Cohen sent a $130,000 payment to Daniels' lawyer just to kill the story before the 2016 election, Colangelo said. Cohen made that payment at Donald Trump's direction and for his benefit, Colangelo said, claiming it was election fraud, pure and simple. Cohen's testimony in the trial, Colangelo said, will be backed up by a paper trail that includes phone logs and business documents and by Donald Trump's own words on tape, in social media posts, in his own books, and in video of his own speeches. Simply put, Colangelo concluded, Trump is guilty of 34 counts of falsifying business records. Then the defense hit back. President Trump is innocent, Trump's defense lawyer Todd Blanche said to begin his opening statement. Blanche said his team will refer to Trump as President Trump throughout the trial out of respect for the office he held. Contradicting prosecutors, Blanche denied that Trump was reimbursing Cohen for the Daniels hush money. Blanche said Cohen was Trump's personal attorney. Moreover, there's nothing wrong with trying to influence an election. It's called democracy, Blanche told the jurors. Blanche added that prosecutors have put a sinister spin on this as if it's a crime, but jurors will learn it's not. And then Blanche amped up the drama. Daniels' testimony, while salacious, doesn't matter, he said. Taking his time, he emphasized that Trump denies the actor's claim, paying Daniels for her agreement to not publicly spread false claims, quote-unquote, about Trump isn't illegal, Blanche told the jurors. As for Cohen, he has a goal, an obsession with getting Trump, and you're going to hear that, the defense attorney added. He's lied multiple times under oath, Blanche began. Prosecutors objected, and Merchan sustained it. Blanche then told jurors they'll learn Cohen has pleaded guilty to lying under oath. Use your common sense, Blanche said. We're New Yorkers. In conclusion, Blanche reminded jurors they promised to put aside any views they have about Trump and decide the case based on the evidence presented in the trial. If they do that, there'll be a very swift, not guilty verdict for Trump, he claimed. After a break, Pecker briefly took the stand for the remainder of the short day. Proceedings ended at 12:30 p.m. due to an alternate juror's emergency dental appointment. Pecker is scheduled to appear again Tuesday after Merchan hears arguments about whether Trump has violated a gag order. It wasn't Trump's only legal proceeding of the day. New York Judge Arthur Engoron approved a new agreement Monday between Trump's lawyers and State Attorney General Letitia James to reinforce the $175 million bond Trump posted to appeal a $454 million judgment in a civil fraud trial for inflating the value of his real estate empire in statements to various lenders. And we will close with a few death notices. In the Cape Cod Times of April 23rd, Mary L. Curley passed at the age of 89 on April 17th. Services and arrangements are with Chapman Funeral and Cremations in Marston's Mills, April 27th at 11 a.m. at Our Lady of Victory Church. Myrna Lauzon passed at the age of 77 on April 17th. Barbara Martin of Katuit passed at the age of 87 on April 16th. Arrangements are with Chapman Funerals and Cremations of Marston's Mills. The services will be April 25th at 11 a.m. at Mosswood Cemetery. Jeffrey Robert Quinn passed at the age of 61 on April 11th. Services will be June 15th at 11 a.m. at the Nippo Lake Country Club. And Lydia M. Zitola of South Yarmouth passed at the age of 78 on April 18th. Arrangements are with the Hallett Funeral Home. The service time will be on April 26th at 11 a.m. at the St. Pius X Church. And that concludes our reading of the Cape Cod Times for Tuesday, April 23rd of 2024. This is your reader, Eric, saying be well, be safe, look after each other. Remember our veterans. Bye for now.